And now to board games. Are you in the more traditional category, preferring Monopoly, Jenga, Trouble, maybe some Connect Four? Just for the record, I happen to play a mean game of Scrabble. You are going down. I kind of mean that. Board game popularity has soared in COVID times. What board games does your household enjoy? 800-642-1234. Gordon Lugauer is president and CEO of the Milwaukee-based board game store chain Board Game Barrister. Gordon, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, very much to have me this morning. It's always a pleasure.
I came of age in the era of Trivial Pursuit, which came out in 81, and playing Trivial Pursuit was a holiday tradition for our family on Christmas Eve, especially in those early years of the game. Teams were large, so much fun. How do you keep classic games like Trivial Pursuit, for instance, how do you keep them fresh?
Well, it depends a lot on the particular game. So if I were to say how to keep a Trivial Pursuit game fresh, there's a couple of things that I would look at there. One, of course, is the questions you're asking. So, if you were going to break out your copy from, the original Genus edition in the blue box from 1981.
Yeah, I'm right there.
those questions probably a little dated, and you might actually have heard them enough times that you just remember the answer.
Oh, right. Yeah. Feel so good.
So that actually gets into the second part of Trivial Pursuit, is that while it's a great game from a question and answer standpoint, and you get to show off, do you know the obscure fact? Are you Cliff Clavin from Cheers? It has that feel bad when you get the question wrong, right? You did all that work to roll the dice and you landed on a spot, and then you got the question, and you got it wrong, and it felt bad, or it feels really good when you've got it. So if you instead get a newer game that can still be a question and answer, did you know the thing? But maybe the gameplay has been adapted a bit such that you have taken out the feel bads. And so now you are exposed just to feel goods. That can be a way to keep the idea of a trivia game fresh. And if you wanted to do that same thing in your old copy of Trivial Pursuit, just look at those elements of the game that as you're playing them, they start to not feel so great. Mm-hmm. And just get rid of them. Right. And just go after the things that make you feel good.
Okay. So what is something much more contemporary or new on the horizon that would be in the vein of trivia?
So if I think of trivia games, and I think of them in two directions, I think of a game where the game is asking you a question and they're getting you an answer, and your part in the game is to know the correct answer. And so there I think of something like Everybody Knows, where instead of getting one hard question and seeing whether you got it right or wrong, you're going to get 10 fairly easy questions, but you only have a minute to answer them. Mm-hmm. So we have that type of game. And then we have games where the players themselves are generating the questions and the answers. So here I have clue-giving games like, I'm going to think of a neat game from Game Right called Who's It, where you have a list of possible things that could be right, and they're generally all people, and the clue-giver is now going to give some obtuse clues to help their teammates zero in on which one is right. So now we still have, I'm thinking about what do I know, what does the other person know, but what's right or wrong in terms of playing that game is different every game and with every group of people.
Oh, I love that. So how would you keep a classic like Monopoly updated and fresh? What would you say about Monopoly today?
Well, so Monopoly, which of course goes all the way back to the turn of the last century as the landlord's game. The first thing I would say about keeping Monopoly fresh is actually to go back to its roots. There are two common rules, one that gets ignored and one that gets added, and that are typically not played with. The first rule that typically gets added is free parking. And it is a common house rule that when you land on free parking, you get the money from the middle. And that feels really good, but it prolongs the game. So because Monopoly is a game about going out of the game because you've lost money. Mm-hmm. So anything that adds money into the game prolongs the game. And yet the most common complaint about Monopoly is that it takes too long. So, right. So if you get rid of putting the penalty money into the middle and getting whoever gets lucky enough to land on free parking when it's got a lot of money gets a lot of money. Just free parking is a space where nothing happens. And play with that rule. It'll speed up your game and it'll increase the tension of the game. It will probably also get you to be trading properties more often because you'll be in a position where you need to trade those properties more often. It'll also make those $6 rents on Connecticut really feel like they mean something.
Okay, so you're talking rules here, and one obstacle to playing new games is learning the rules, learning the strategy. Players are then also might be required to explain the rules to someone else who doesn't know them, and some people are better explainers than others. So what advice do you have about learning new games and being open to that?
So that's a great question, near and dear to my heart. First, let's all acknowledge that learning the rules by reading a rule book is the most painful way to learn a new game.
Yes. Amen.
Because learning how to read a rule book is a skill. And frankly, a lot of rule books, even the good ones, are still not real good. So keep that in mind. It is always easier and oftentimes better to be taught a game than it is to learn a game. So let's say that up front. If you are someone who is teaching a game, and I could probably make a long segment about this, merely reciting the rules to your players isn't necessarily helpful to them. When I'm teaching a game, I try to think of the framework, which is different for each game, but I try to think about what are you doing on a turn? Get them to the essence of what's happening and don't overload them with information. If I have one recommendation for those of you who are going to teach games, it's this. The first game doesn't count. Use that, sit down, play someone through a first couple of turns such that you can unfold the rules as you go. Don't attempt to tell them everything at once and then play the game. Tell them a little bit, show them a little bit, walk them through those first couple of turns or maybe even the first full game and get it under your belt such that the stress is off. And then play a game for real.
Oh, I love that. Unfold the game. Have them get a little bit of a feel for it first before you just throw everything but the kitchen sink at them.
You have to, because the brain needs to understand what the context for each of those new rules are. They have to understand how it's fitting together, what makes this game cool, what's going to make this experience fun. So unfold that for your players. That's the best way to do it.
We're talking board games with the head of a Milwaukee area board game retail chain, Gordon Lugauer, with us. What is your favorite board game? What holiday board game traditions do you have? How have you kept classic games fresh? Have you changed some of those rules? What did you find? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with the barrister, Gordon Lugauer, here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing our love of board games on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the University of Pittsburgh, the longest Monopoly game was played at Pitt 60 years ago, lasting a whole 5 days, if you believe. What is the longest you've played a board game for? When did you call it quits? Who won? Did it matter at that point? 800-642-1234. Gordon Lugauer, CEO of a Milwaukee-based board game store chain, with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Ray now in Superior. Hi, Ray.
Hi. The game that I'm is Probe, a word game. My mother would think of words all through the year. She would have a little notebook. She'd be writing them down so that when we'd get together as a family, she'd be able to have one ready to stump us. So I encourage folks who, probe.
Probe. Ray, thank you. Gordon?
So I'm actually not familiar with Probe, but what I can say is there's a long tradition of games that we would play. They're called parlor games. They weren't going to buy them in a store. You would you'd come up with words all throughout the course of the year. I think of a Fishbowl and Celebrity being some of my favorites, and a number of those then get made into games that you can buy at a store, which is great for two reasons. It's great for the people who had not been introduced to the game. This is a way that they get to play that experience. And even for those of us who did play the game as a parlor game, we maybe got stuck in a rut because we didn't have a mom who was going to spend all year coming up with words. We were instead going to come up with our own words right on the spot. And we always kind of came up with the same ones.
Ray, thank you so much. Ray brings up word games. Just wondering what you feel deep down for Scrabble.
So I happen to love Scrabble a great deal. I actually still play it today. but it does get to be the waiting a long time to play that perfect word only to have it snatched out from under you and then have to come up with another word on the fly. Sometimes, you know, that can be a little tough.
Oh, okay. So kind of a mixed bag with Scrabble. I'll take it. I'll take that. Dale now in Oshkosh. Dale, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What is on your mind with board games?
Well, I'm a bit of a board game nerd. I've got tons and tons of games. I've been to Gordon's shop, a couple of them, tons of times. This holiday season, I am full-heartedly recommending a game called Camel Up. It's a relatively easy price point, around 30 to 40 bucks. Great table presence. Like, it plays 3 to 8 players, usually about 40 minutes, and you're just betting on camels racing, and you're not like, you know, it's fun, it's raucous, you can make the camels go fast and slow, there's camels moving the opposite direction, like, it is a blast. I teach it whenever I have people, like, more than three, and it is a huge, it always goes over really well. Camel Up.
Oh, Dale, thank you so much. Gordon, this sounds like your ideal customer right there.
Okay. Thank you for visiting our stores. I certainly appreciate it. Camel Up is also a great game and a fantastic introduction to all of the listeners today. Camel Up is really, really a hoot, and it does look great.
Well, Dale mentioned price point. What are your favorite affordable board games?
So board games as a whole are a really affordable hobby if you compare them to any other experience that you're going to get. You know, if you think about the shared experience of a board game, even an expensive board game that might be $50 or $60, or today we have games that are coming out at well over $100 every week, it seems. There's a new big board game that's a huge chunky box. But you're going to be able to play that with, you know, like Camel Up, you could play with 8 people, and you could play that a whole bunch of times. And you compare that to the movies or going out to bowling or really anything, frankly, even compare it to your streaming subscriptions, right? If that streaming subscription went to a board game budget, you'd have an amazing collection of board games well within a year. So board games as a whole are a really, really affordable way to make connections with your friends and family. And that's really what it's all about.
What about board games in the pandemic? What have you seen there?
So we saw early in the pandemic a huge shift towards small player games, either things that you can play alone, which got us into puzzly games and escape room games, or things that you could play with your small pod of people. And again, it just became a really, really important way to build those connections, to keep things fresh, and to give your mind something to focus on that was fun and engaging, but not being exposed to all of the tumult of the world. And that also meant that we saw a big shift away from big group party games. So those are kind of the two major trends that we saw in the pandemic. But the other part to that is that people who started to play games really recognized how just immersive and important that hobby can be to your lifestyle. Again, it's just a really great way to spend time with your friends and family.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Gordon Lugauer, runs the Board Game Barrister stores in Milwaukee area as we discuss our passion for board games this time of year. Let's bring in Marcus now in Milwaukee. Marcus, what do you have for us? Oh, Marcus, are you there?
Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride. Yeah. What do you love?
My kids and I, we just love it. And then you got the expansion maps, and we actually got them at the Bayshore store.
Oh, awesome. So, and you know, talking about a ticket, you know, Ticket to Ride or these hobby type board games, I think this category might be called, Catan would be in that category, Gordon. What do you see out of this type of game?
Oh, so this type of game, you know, addresses so many of the issues that actually came out when we talked about Monopoly and Scrabble. So we have really important elements to this. First off, they tend to be shorter to play. They're often easier to learn. They're just different. They tend to not have player elimination. So people are involved in the game the whole time. They tend to not have an obvious winner. You can't tell who's winning early in the game. Everybody feels like they're in it until the end. And they tend to have different ways that you can play them successfully and have a winning strategy out of that. So those are things that we tend to see. They also tend to have great themes like Ticket to Ride, which is, you know, again, one of my favorites, which is all about trains, right? And the number of people who come into the store and say, I'm looking for, I don't know, it's the train game. And we're like, Ticket to Ride? Well, yes, that's it, right? So it's just really immersive and they're really easy to pass on to other people, pass on that love of that game to the new people you play it with.
We have a short amount of time left, but, you know, I think Marcus mentioned expansion packs or extension packs, and like Catan has expansion packs. Are these worth it? What are these?
So are they worth it is a question for you, the player. Sometimes they, and some of them are better than others, but it always depends a bit on how much you are going to play that game. I will often counsel someone if they're looking at buying a new game and an expansion, or a new game and another new game, I'll recommend get the two different new games, because you don't know that you're really going to love that first one yet enough to play that other expansion. And bringing multiple games to a game night means you're more likely to get one that's a hit. So that's always my recommendation there. But oftentimes those expansions really are, they can matter a whole bunch, and they can be very, very good.
Gordon, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure as always. Look forward to being on your show again. Thank you.
Thank you. Gordon Lugauer runs the Board Game Barrister Stores in Milwaukee. Just ahead, as tech in our homes gets smarter, what are the best smart home devices? We talk with a PC Mag smart home analyst as part of our Ask a Contractor series. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.